Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. I'm your host, Bob Ruff, and on today's episode, we are going to wrap up our investigation into two of our suspects, Leonard Mosley and Angela Walker, as far as their involvement in the murder of Elnora Griffin. As a disclaimer before we begin this episode, as I just stated, we are going to summarize their involvement as possible suspects into the murder. I am not accusing either one of these two people of being the actual murderer. I do not know who killed Elnora at this point. The purpose of today's episode is to add in all of the new information that we received from the Smith County Open Records Request and cross-reference that with everything that we already had and determine what we do know and what we don't know about Leonard and Angela. After today's episode, we're going to move on to another topic. Hidden within these 5,000 pages of new documents that we've received and the new crime scene photos, we have a lot more to talk about. But as for today's show, we're going to begin segment one by breaking down Leonard Mosley's interview with Tim Lowndes of ISIS, the defense investigators. Like I've mentioned in previous episodes, we know that Tim Lowndes actually interviewed Leonard Mosley on three occasions, once in March, once in April, and once in May in 1994. The only interview that we have access to, as far as the recording and the transcripts, was the second interview in April of 1994, and that's what we'll be discussing today. Also, I know that there are several of you that are going to want to hear this interview for yourself. Unfortunately, the sound quality is so bad, it would be a horrible listen for me to put it into the episode. But for those of you that want to tough through it, what I'm going to do is at the end of this episode, after the closing credits, I'm going to drop in the recorded interview with Mosley and Lowndes. If you don't want to suffer through the terrible sound quality, you can just read the transcripts or just listen to this episode. And after the closing credits, you can shut this off. There'll be nothing more from me after the credits. It will only be the recorded interview. But if you do want to hear it, feel free to keep listening after the credits. On April 29, 1994, Tim Lowndes knocked on Leonard Mosley's door for the second time. It's obvious when you read this interview that Leonard and Lowndes had spoken before. Lowndes has given Leonard some information, or Leonard has given Lowndes some information prior to this. We know from Lowndes' testimony at trial that in one of the interviews, Leonard was describing details from the crime scene that Lowndes said that he shouldn't know. And you see here on page 3 that one of these things is brought up, but we don't know whether Lowndes had previously told Leonard about this, or if Leonard had told Lowndes about it. I actually believe that this is something that Lowndes had already told Leonard about. Here on page 3, Tim is explaining to Leonard why he's investigating the case. It's pretty obvious, and Lowndes clearly states that he does not think that Ed did this. In fact, on page 3, Lowndes says, "I still think that while he may have been there, I don't think he did it." And right after that, Mosley says, "You don't know exactly where the scratch marks, ? So it seems like this was in reference to a previous conversation. It does answer the question for us as to how Angela would have known about the scratch marks. Leonard obviously knows about them here, and given that that was his response to Lowndes saying that he doesn't believe that Ed did it, I'm assuming that in their first interview, Lowndes must have pointed out to him that there were scratch marks on Elnora's back, and therefore he thought a female did it, and not Ed. They go on for a little while to talk about the scratch marks. Lowndes is pointing out that she couldn't have scratched herself in that manner because of the angle of the scratches. And on page 4, Lowndes says, "That's why I think a woman had to be involved." And I'll say that I agree with Tim Lowndes' take here. I don't think there's any question that those are fingernail scratch marks in the middle of Elnora's back. But then Mosley responds to that and says, "Well, see, the reason why I think so is because I know this woman, you know, and she had been calling, you know, so..." Now remember back to Mosley's interview with Dale Huckel a few days after the murder. The reference there seemed to be that Leonard's ex-wife was calling Elnora. Remember, Huckel was making reference to the harassing phone calls regarding Angela, and Leonard said, "No, that's my ex-wife. Angela's not my ex-wife." Lowndes goes on to say that he had tried to contact Kubia and ask her about the phone calls. He says, "I did ask her if she knew of any phone calls, and she said that if she was getting them, that Elnora hadn't told her." As the interview goes on, Leonard seems to be doing about the same thing he was doing with me when I was speaking to him. He's letting Lowndes know that he's an open book, and then he's doing something that my kids tend to do a lot. When they're trying to make me believe something, they'll usually try to confirm their story by telling me that someone else had said it. Let me give an example of what I'm talking about. I'll start here at the bottom of page 4. Tim Lowndes says, "Oh, definitely. I fully expect that even though I represent the defendant, I fully expect that they want to make sure that the murderer is not walking out free." Mosley says, "I mean, it's not like you're trying to get him off." Lowndes says, "I'm trying to see what the evidence shows, and to me, the evidence doesn't add up." Mosley said, "Yeah, see, a lot of people think, you know, they say, well, he's working for a defendant's attorney." Lowndes says, "I do, in all honesty, I do." Mosley says, "I know, but see, when they say that, they say, well, he's just trying to get him off, you know." I say, no, he's not trying to get him off, he's just trying to find out what the deal is." Lowndes says, "I want to find the truth." And Mosley says, "And if somebody else involved, get them too. That's how I see it." As it goes on, Lowndes repeats again, "It doesn't add up to me that Edward did it, at least not by himself." And Mosley says, "I don't know, you know, I've always thought that, you know, it was that his mom's involved too. I feel she's the one that did the planning." Lowndes then asks Mosley if anything was discovered missing. Leonard says no, there wasn't. And then Leonard goes on to say, "Wasn't nothing missing but her car keys." Inaudible. They never found her car keys. They went out there and inaudible. And I believe he's talking about them searching the pond there based on Lowndes' response to that. Mosley goes on to say that he believes that somebody was driving her car. He says she never pulled her car that far back behind the house. She would put it up on the concrete, inaudible. When I was coming from Tyler, I could always see her car before I turned off. Now, I'm a little curious here to figure out how did Leonard know exactly what wasn't taken and that her car keys were. There's no evidence of Huckel telling him that during the interview. From the way things sounded, Elnora's family was suspecting Leonard. Maybe they told him, I just don't know. That's one of the reasons why I've been dying to get a hold of Elnora's family. They can answer a lot of these questions for us. And as I mentioned in the Friday follow-up episode, listener Adam Lewis was able to track down several members of her family. I haven't been able to get in contact with them yet, but I'm confident that I will be able to soon. I have a few more options left. But as the interview goes on, and I'm at the bottom of page 5 now if you're following along on the website, it looks like Lowndes is asking Leonard if he had driven by Elnora's house the night her body was found. It says inaudible at the beginning of his sentence, so I don't know for sure. But Leonard was talking about how whenever he drove by, he could see her car. Lowndes says, inaudible, by there when all this was going on. Leonard says, no, I went up there and, that night, my brother. Lowndes comes in, that Friday night when they found her. And then in this next paragraph, Leonard seems to change his thought right in the middle of his paragraph. He says, my brother was home from Tyler, inaudible, and he woke me up and told me, and I got back up. As soon as I, what I'll do, I'll find her sister and I'll call her and I'll talk to her about you and I'll tell her who you are and what you're doing, stuff like that, because all they want, inaudible. So as you can see, Mosley interrupts himself here, right in the middle of his sentence. He was in the middle of describing how he found out something had happened and when he went up there the night Elnora's body was found, and then mid-sentence he flips over to telling Lowndes that he's going to help him get a hold of the family members. You, of course, can decide for yourself, but to me, it seems like a very obvious subject change. It seems like Leonard did not want to talk about that night. Then in the middle of page 6, we finally find the answer to the question that we've all been wondering about since I interviewed Leonard this summer. This was the sound clip that was really hard to hear at the end of last week's episode. Remember, when I talked to Leonard, he told me on 6 different times that Elnora had been choked to death. And when I finally told him that her throat had been slit, he said, see, I didn't even know that. That's the first I've ever heard of her throat being slit. Well, we now know that that was an absolute lie. I think that we had all kind of already figured that out, but we didn't have any real evidence. We knew that all the newspaper reporting said that her throat had been slit. We knew that all the other people surrounding the case knew that her throat had been slit. It seemed almost impossible that Leonard couldn't have known this. And as it turns out, that's true. So on page 6, Mosley says, inaudible, she should be inaudible. Lowndes says, nobody should be killed like that. Mosley says, we don't have any control over anybody's death, but you just don't, inaudible. Lowndes says, a car accident you can kind of accept, but this is different. Mosley says, you know, but just go and just kill somebody. Just cut somebody's throat, inaudible, for no reason. For what reason? I can't even, inaudible, and she wasn't raped, right? Now keep in mind here, and we'll discuss this in further detail in segment 2, but the only question that Leonard kept asking Huckel when he was being interviewed by the Sheriff's Department was whether there was any evidence that she had had sex or she'd been raped. He kept asking if there was semen found on the scene and whether they had found fingerprints on her body. And again here, several months later when he's interviewing with Lowndes, he's asking him if she had been raped. Lowndes says no, wasn't raped. Mosley says she, inaudible, wasn't any evidence of Edward's semen in her or in... Lowndes says, nope, none whatsoever. And then if you listen at the end, you'll hear it, but you can even read the stuttering here. So she hadn't had sexual intercourse, period? There's a very noticeable difference here between this statement and other statements where Leonard seems much more confident. But again, he's asking if there's any evidence that she had intercourse. Lowndes says, nope. Lowndes goes on to tell him that there's no forced entry, so it had to be someone that she would trust. Leonard goes on to say that he just doesn't buy the fact that Elnora would let Edward in by himself at night. He said, if Edward had been by himself, she would have told him, well, I'm here by myself, you come back tomorrow. Lowndes says, her being undressed, that still confuses me, I don't understand that. And Mosley says, yeah, it's just strange. As the interview goes on page 9, they're discussing the fact that there's not really a motive. And then in the middle of the page, Leonard says, I blame myself a lot, though. Lowndes says, why is that? He says, because she had cooked, because she was expecting me to come by. But like I say, I forgot my clothes. Inaudible. If I had went, see, I get off at 11. I would have made it there by about 12. Inaudible. She called me at 11. Inaudible. Knowing. Inaudible. Now, as an aside here, when Leonard interviewed with Huckel, he had said that it was actually Elnora's daughter-in-law that called her around 11 o'clock. But here he's saying that she called him at 11. Lowndes says, see, that's another point. I don't think Edward did it, especially after talking to you, because they know where Edward was after 11. They know for a fact where Edward was after 11. There's no question about it. Leonard's next line is inaudible. Lowndes says, uh-huh. Leonard's next line is inaudible again. And when you listen to the recording, you'll hear he's just mumbling. I think the first one he says, oh, really? But it's really hard to hear. Lowndes says, no, they know for a fact that he was in Tyler at a little bit after 11. There was two people there that said he was there at their house, and they've got nothing to do with any of this. Mosley says, oh, really? Lowndes says, that's, you know, especially after talking to you the last time, I thought, if she was alive at 11, then they got the wrong guy, and the right person is still out here free. But then Mosley changes his story. He says, yeah, that's what her daughter-in-law said, because, see, they came by there Friday, you know, and I was talking to them and stuff, and that's what she said. She said, I called her at 11 and talked to her because they were talking to her about coming down, you know, the next day or Friday. Now, that whole statement was BS, too, because we know that Elnora's family was not coming down to see her that Friday or Saturday. They had been down the weekend before. Both Johnny and Kubia stated that Elnora was planning to go to Dallas to see them that Friday or Saturday. And then Mosley ends that paragraph with, and if I had went by there, I could have saved her, or I'd got killed or something, too. Lowndes says, no, I mean, it's not your fault. It's just, I know what you're saying. You feel responsible. Mosley says, you know, I go by there every Thursday, and I go by, and then this happened, inaudible. Went by there early enough to come and get some clothes, but you know, you can't, inaudible. That's in God's hands. You don't know how we're going to die, or what God know, and it's in his hands. When your number come up, you're going to die. It doesn't make a difference how you, inaudible, if I had done this. Lowndes says, yeah, well, I imagine that even 100 times more. I'm not sure what he meant by that. Then Mosley's next sentence kind of stunned me. Mosley says, yeah, you know, it was just her time. Her number came up. Inaudible. That's basically the end of the real context of this interview. It goes on for a couple more pages, but they're basically just exchanging phone numbers, and Leonard's helping Lowndes get some contact information for Elnora's family. The big takeaway from this interview, to me, was finally having confirmation that Leonard did indeed absolutely know Elnora's cause of death. And now that we have this interview, and Huckel's interview with Leonard, and the first trial transcripts, we now have a lot of information to cross-reference, and we can get a much clearer picture of what was going on with Leonard, Angela, and Elnora at the time of Elnora's murder. And we'll be breaking all of that down right after the break. In this segment, we're going to summarize everything that we actually know about Angela Walker and Leonard Mosley. Let's start out with why we don't know much about Mosley. At the first trial, Ed's attorneys were relentless. They were really fighting for Ed. It was like two completely different people than they were in the second trial. But in that first trial, Dobbs had recalled Dale Huckel during the rebuttal phase, and in cross, McLean really got into his ass. What we find from this section of the transcript, and it'll be posted up on the website, is that Huckel, The lead investigator in the case had no idea that Leonard Mosley went to Elnora's on Thursday nights. He had no idea that Mosley was planning to go over there the night she was killed, and he had no idea what his excuse was for not going that night. I found this to be shocking, so I went back and reread the interview transcript from Huckel's interview with Mosley. And sure enough, Huckel was so busy telling Leonard that he didn't think that he did it that his usual Thursday visits never came up in the conversation. Also in this section of the transcript, McLean calls into question Huckel's previous testimony about confirming Mosley's work records. McLean asks Huckel if he ever went to Tyler Pipe to verify Leonard's story. Huckel says no, but he called. McLean then confronts him with his report on the case, which, by the way, the lead investigator in this murder case only wrote a 4.5-page report on the investigation. McLean asks Huckel why he didn't document the call in his report. He points out that he made sure to document every detail about Ed, statements that, as we discussed a few weeks ago, we now know to be lies, and he documents his call to Angela Walker where he says that Angela confirmed Leonard's alibi, which she actually didn't. The takeaway is that there's no proof that Huckel actually called Tyler Pipe to confirm Mosley's story. We have to take Huckel's word for it, and as we already know, Huckel is not above straight-out lying in his reports. We have proof of that, i.e. the knife story. When we couple that with the fact that the timesheets obtained by the prosecution before trial had inconsistencies, the whole situation becomes extremely disturbing. Remember that on Mosley's timesheet, that Huckel never bothered to pursue, it says that he worked 50 hours that week, but was paid 40 hours straight time and 13 hours overtime. There were two other individuals on that timesheet that worked the exact same hours and were paid 40 hours of straight time and 10 hours of overtime. It's really too bad Huckel didn't do his job, because if he had, we wouldn't be in this situation. If Mosley is innocent, and Huckel had actually followed up on all the leads relevant to him, we wouldn't be sitting here 20 years later wondering if Leonard should be a suspect. If he had cared enough about the case and didn't have blinders on, maybe he would have checked Mosley for scratches and bruises 4 days after Elnora's body was found. Maybe he would have checked his shoes and his clothes. But instead, we are left trying to piece together Leonard and Angela's statements to figure out what happened. So let's look at Angela for a minute. What do we know about her? She told me that Margie wanted Leonard, and I don't believe that for a minute. She told me that Margie poisoned her dog the night before the murder and called her and threatened her. She says that she called the police. There is no such police report on record, and in fact, Leonard told Huckel that that event actually occurred the day after the murder and had nothing to do with Margie. And she didn't call the police, she called his brother Michael. Angela testified at the first trial that she and Leonard had been dating since 1991, 2 years before the murder. Leonard has always maintained that they were just friends, and in my interview with him this summer, he said that he never dated her. She was just a one-night stand that resulted in a baby. Leonard has always maintained that he let Angela move back in with him because he was, quote, helping out a friend, while Angela says that he asked her to move back in because he was jealous that she was living with another man. Angela refers to Elnora as Leonard's, quote, side chick, while Leonard says he was engaged to Elnora, the relationship was great, and Angela was just a friend. Leonard does, however, tell Huckel and testify at trial that Angela knew about Elnora and was jealous. He even told Huckel that Angela had been calling and harassing Elnora. At trial, too, Leonard testified that he was sleeping in the same bed as Angela and having sex with her. But Angela herself is also full of inconsistencies. At trial one, she testified that she had no idea where Elnora lived. But at trial two, she tells Dobbs that on the night of the murder, she drove by Elnora's and saw Ed crouching behind her car. My question is, if she didn't know where she lived, what she drove, or what she looked like, how the hell did she drive by and see Ed by her car? The big question that I've always had with Angela is why does it sometimes seem like she's covering for Leonard, but other times it seems like she's throwing him under the bus? For example, she consistently says at both trials that he did not get home until 12:45 on the night of the murder. This directly conflicts with Leonard's story of getting home at 12:10. But then at trial one, she says that she knows for a fact that he does not go to Elnora's on Thursday nights. So in one case, it almost seems like she's protecting him, but in the other, she's throwing up red flags. Why? The answer lies in the first trial transcripts, and these transcripts will be up on the website. I don't mean to sound mean, but it appears that Angela really isn't all that bright. At best, she's confused. She does keep sticking to the 12:45 story. However, her testimony in Trial 1 reveals that she is under the impression that he always gets home at 12:45. So when Angela says that he got home at 12:45 It's clear that she believes that is the same as saying he got home at his normal time. Having that new information, we can summarize Angela like this. She never interviewed with Hugel. She spoke with him on the phone and scheduled a time to come in to do an interview. She says she missed the appointment and Hugel never followed up. The defense investigators tried to track her down all over Texas and were unable to make contact. The first we hear from her is at Trial 1. At Trial 1, she says that she and Leonard had been on again, off again for 2 years, and at the time of the murder, he had made a choice to leave Elnora and be with her. She says that he was not seeing Elnora, and she doesn't know anything about Elnora or where she lives. She does say at Trial 1 that she and Leonard talked about Elnora, and he hadn't seen her, quote, like for days. She says that conversation happened the week of the murder. She says that Leonard came straight home after work on the night of the murder, and he did not go to Elnora's. The only real conflict here with Leonard's story is the nature of his relationship with Angela, but really this is to be expected if he was lying about it. He wouldn't tell Angela that he had told police, investigators, and testified at trial that she was only a friend. Also, there is no way that she would know that he had said that, since she never met with Hugel or the investigators. As far as who is telling the truth about the relationship, I'm going to side with Angela on this one. I say that because even though Mosley claims he was just helping a friend out, he also testified that they were sleeping in the same bed and having sex. Background checks reveal that Angela had Leonard's address listed on her public documents in 1991 and 1992. Kubia testified at Trial 1 that Elnora broke off the engagement with Leonard because he was, quote, dating someone else. Hugel referenced in his interview with Mosley that Elnora's family told him that Elnora had told them that she had broken off with him for the same reason. The only person saying that everything was good with Elnora and Leonard and Angela were just friends was Leonard. So then we have to ask ourselves, why lie about that? Why does an innocent man so clearly lie about the status of his relationships if his relationships have nothing to do with Elnora's death? So let's continue on with what we know about Leonard Mosley. The big find this week wasn't something that Leonard said. It was something that he didn't say. Like I mentioned earlier, when Mosley was being interviewed by police just 4 days after Elnora's body was found, he failed to mention to them that he not only always went over to Elnora's house on Thursdays, but that he was supposed to go on that Thursday, and that she was expecting him. Even though Hugel is assuring him that he's not a suspect, and Gorman was fishing for information about this, Leonard kept it to himself. At one point, Gorman asked him if he ever goes to her house after work. He says he does. Gorman asks if she ever does something for him when he comes over. It appears to me that he's referencing the food on the stove. Leonard says she hugs and kisses him. He says that he wants to do everything that he can to help them solve the case, but leaves out the key detail about the fact that she was planning on him coming by that night. Even if he's innocent, that would still be a big help to investigators who were trying to figure out why the doors were unlocked and the light was on. But Leonard leaves that part out, even when they were fishing for it. He does, however, in both interviews that we have access to, ask a lot of questions about whether there is any evidence that Elnora had had sex. He asks about semen, fingerprints on the body, etc. My impression is that he wants to know what they know. I'm not clear when or how Hugel and the gang found out about the Thursday visit. Based on Gorman's question, I think it's reasonable to assume that someone at the crime scene had told them. We do know that by the time the trial rolled around, Leonard had perfected his reason for not following through with his plans to visit that night. He didn't have extra work clothes because he found out that morning he had to work on Friday. However, he changes his story 3 times as to exactly when he found that information out. Some other inconsistencies include his story about his work hours on Friday. At Trial 1, he testifies that he went in at 7 a.m. Then he later corrects that to 6 a.m. Angela says that he left at 7 a.m., but that doesn't fit because it takes around 30 minutes to get to Tyler Pipe from his house, so he would have had to leave much earlier than that. He also states at Trial 1 that he didn't get off work Friday until 11 p.m. It's a long day. And then we have the phone calls. In his interview with Hugel, he doesn't say anything about trying to call Elnora on Thursday, but he says that he tried to call Friday, from work, twice. He says he tried once at 10 minutes till 10 and once at 10 minutes after 10 p.m. For context, this would have been exactly when Waller and McKay were in the trailer processing the crime scene. Now, he has also told me that he went into work at 7 a.m. on Friday, but in this version, he told me that he got off work in the daylight hours, around 3 p.m. In between these two statements, he testified at Trial 2 that he worked 11:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. that Friday. It's also worth noting that Leonard explained to me that he didn't just go to Elnora's on Thursday nights. He started his visit on Thursdays, because he was off Friday through Sunday. I find it odd that he was planning to go Thursday and wasn't able to because he had no clothes. Then why didn't he swing by on Friday when he got off? The bottom line is this. Angela and Leonard have both consistently held to the mutual alibi that the night Elnora was killed, he did not go to Elnora's and that he went straight home from work. But all of the events and details surrounding this story are inconsistent and ever-changing. Mosley asks a lot about semen and whether or not Elnora had had sex. There's a semen stain found on the comforter that matches his blood type. We know that there was most definitely friction between Leonard, Angela, and Elnora, and that Leonard was most definitely planning on going over there that night, and Elnora was most definitely expecting him. She was found fully nude with his meal on the stove, and the evidence suggests that she was wearing precisely the type of outfit that he described to Huckel, panties and a house coat. And we now know that 23 years after the fact, when an independent journalist stopped by to talk to him, he went out of his way to intentionally pretend that he did not know how Elnora was killed. As far as Leonard and Angela go, for me, they continue to be my prime suspects. But for now, I'm moving on. Very soon, Allison will be filing motions for testing to be done on the evidence from this case, including a DNA test on the fingernail clipping from Elnora's left hand. The DPS report seems to indicate that Elnora most certainly got a piece of her killer during the struggle, and that killer's DNA lives on that clipping. But until then, I'm going to take a break from proving to you who did do it, and next week, with newly discovered evidence, I will prove to you once and for all who did not kill Elnora Griffin. Truth and Justice is a production of New Beginning Incorporated. Our executive producer is Mike Bussing. I want to thank Tate Krupa for designing and creating our logo. Opening music was To the Top by Score Squad. All other music was created by Shane Yoder. I want to thank our transcription team, Sarah Hoyt, Sarah Mueller, and Desiree Dunn for transcribing the episodes every week and mailing them out to Ed and Kenny. And I want to sincerely thank all of you for all of your help and support. Once again this week, after the Friday follow-up episode, you all have continued to prove to me how strong the Truth and Justice Army really is. I'm recording this on Friday afternoon, and we already have a ton of leads on how to track down a 1989 Mercury Tracer hatchback four-door. This is a very difficult vehicle to find. It wasn't that popular back when it was new, and now being almost 30 years old, very few of them actually exist. But it's nothing that the listeners of this show can't handle, and I want to thank you for that and all of your other support. Keep sending in your thoughts, theories, and ideas to theories@truthandjusticepod.com. Send in new cases to cases@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like the Facebook page or follow us on Twitter @truthjusticepod. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, I'm signing off. I'm Bob Ruff, and this has been Truth and Justice.
Pretty good, Tim Lowndes.
What are you?
Sorry to come in so late on you. Yeah. I actually got lost on the county road to Dark.
You called the south, right?
Yeah, but I overshot it and ended up in Gregg County. Oh, I got in Gregg County. I knew I'd.
You came back to Midway.
Yeah, I ended up going all the way to Gregg County.
You leave this way, right?
Yeah, that's shorter, isn't it?
Yeah, you know how to get back that way, though.
Go follow the road until it come to, is it 757? Then I take a right? There's a 2767. Yeah. I just overshot where I was going. I thought, man, I know I've been here, but I couldn't find it.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you found that.
Not yet. I did.
Okay. I think I might have figured out her son's name. Do you know if it might be Charles Bassett?
That's his name, Charles.
Does he live in DeSoto by chance?
Yeah, but what? I was just, yeah. I was just curious.
funeral was in DeSoto?
Well, I lived in. We went to DeSoto, then we got on another ferry and went. Probably,
when you get into Dallas, I can't tell one town from the next.
But see, I didn't go
80. Yeah, where you can go south.
Yeah. Yeah, 20 and 1. It's
got
the
4
around there.
Okay.
So,
you know?
Her sister lived there too. They live close together. Yeah.
Eleanor's sister?
Well, I don't know if they married. Not,
because
they plan on getting married.
Okay.
Who made
that call?
My daughter, yeah.
Yeah.
But, man, I had a sister, mama. She gave it to me. I told her when I found out something, I was. She found out something, she got it in or something. I was going to deal with it.
Well, you've already got my number, so that's okay. I think that things are maybe moving towards a trial or something here in the next month. And my thoughts haven't changed. I still think that while he may have been there, I don't think he did it.
You don't know exactly where the scratch marks.
Yeah, if I'd been thinking, the attorneys have the photos. But I had some photocopies of the photos. And if I'd been thinking, I could have brought them. On the lower back.
Like I heard, down here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way that she would be scratching herself.
No, it was in the center, kind of going down towards her buttocks.
And see, there's no way that she was there.
No, it was like somebody taking a, you know, it's just like that.
There's a lot of talk going on there. She couldn't scratch herself.
I don't think, looking at the pictures, I don't. There's no way her hand could do that.
How could she take herself
scratching
herself?
Well, not only that, but her hand couldn't reach where the.
Yeah, it didn't go down.
Yeah, not. I mean, like this maybe, but it was like that.
Yeah.
So.
It's
that's kind of why I think a woman had to be involved.
But see, I think so. Because I know this woman, and she had been calling me, so, I don't know.
Yeah, I did try to talk to QB, and I told her, I said, I understand she was a good friend, I don't want to upset you, but it would help if I could talk to you. And she really didn't want to talk to me, but I did ask her if she knew of any phone calls, and she said that if she was getting them, that QB, that Eleanor hadn't told her. Think she might have told that daughter-in-law?
Well, if not her, she told my daughter. I know. She heard her daughter talking about. You talking about?
Yeah, see, I don't know who her daughter is. I know she lives in Alabama.
Her daughter's
Would it also have been Bassett, or she remarried?
No, she's married. But when you talk to one, then you can get that information. They want to know.
Oh, definitely. I fully expect that, even though I represent the defendant, I fully expect that they want to make sure that murder's not walking out free.
I mean, it's not like you trying to get him off.
I'm trying to see what the evidence shows.
Yeah.
And to me, the evidence doesn't add up.
You know, see, a lot of people think, he's working for the attorney.
Well, and I do. In all honesty,
I
do.
I know. See, when they say that, it's, he's just trying to get him off. I said, no, he's not trying to get him off. He's just trying to find out what the real deal is.
I want to find the truth.
Somebody else involved, get them too. That's what I see,
I'm looking for the truth. Like I told you the first time, I don't manufacture anything. If it comes back that Edward did it and Edward was the only one involved, then that's who's going to pay for it. But it doesn't add up to me that Edward did it, at least not by himself.
Yeah. I've always thought his mom was involved too. I figured she was the one that did the planning.
You know, if anything was ever discovered really missing, I mean, her TV was there.
No, it wasn't.
I mean, it wasn't like a burglary.
Was nothing missing but her car. Her car. I don't even know if it was the note found on her car. They were out there. She was out there in that lake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read where they thoroughly checked that pond and they didn't find anything out there.
What up to the keys, I don't know. But somebody, I figured somebody had been driving that car. She never pulled her car that far back behind the house.
Mm-hmm.
And she would put it up on the concrete and whatever. Like, if I was from Tyler, I could always see her car before I turned off in there.
Yeah, the way that driveway ran, you could.
Yeah, I could always see the back of her car.
Mm-hmm.
But see, there's no, I mean, you couldn't even see the car. Not even coming from Kiel.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't even see it. It was way back, almost off the concrete, real close to the house. She was
out by there when all this was going on.
I went out there that night. My brother.
That Friday night when they found her.
My brother from Tyler. I was in the bed and he woke me up and told me I got back up. I'll find her sister's
up. Okay.
Then I call her. You know, I talk to her about you. You know, I tell her who you are, and what you're doing, stuff like that. You know, probably the biggest one.
Exactly. And tell her I'm just as diplomatic as I can be, because I know that this is upsetting. And if they want to talk to me and then they decide they don't want to, I'm not going to push them. I'll respect that. I understand this. There's her sister she's talking about. And who did it? I still feel bad for them because the family has been put through total hell.
She should be bad.
Nobody should be killed like that.
We don't have any control over anybody's death. You just
that's our accent you can kind of accept, but this is different.
But just going, just cut somebody's throat, man, beat him. You know, I mean, for no reason. For what reason?
Mm-hmm.
I can't even. She wasn't robbed. And she wasn't raped, right?
No.
Wasn't
raped.
She didn't, it wasn't any evidence of ever semen in her.
None whatsoever.
So she had sexual intercourse, period.
Nope. It's really baffling. I mean, I've run through it in my mind 1,000 times. There was no forced entry, so it had to be somebody that she would trust.
That's all that. Like, her being about herself at night, it just don't seem like, you know, from what I knew about her, that she would have told, if Emma had been by herself, she would have told him, well, you know, I'm here by myself, you come back tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Just the fact by him being a man. You know, because she was real sweet, man, but she didn't do stuff like ordinary woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she didn't gossip. She didn't, you know, she just like stay by. She didn't deal with like two women. You know,
mm-hmm.
And she just didn't do that. You know, she went to work. She came home and, you know, she was out. You know. She went shopping or something like that, and she went by herself or something, or something like that. Probably went shopping or something. She was talking about different stuff and stuff like that. I feel like she would have let him in the house by, you know, just him being by herself.
Mm-hmm. Well, and her being undressed, that still confuses me. I don't understand that, but
yeah, it's just strange.
I was trying to give you a call earlier. I don't think I wrote down your phone number right. Could I get that again?
984-571-1002.
984?
17.
That's why. I wasn't dialing 5710.
Yeah.
I couldn't read my writing after I got back. I haven't called 5716.
Oh, really?
That's why I wasn't getting it.
Where'd they get the number?
If you wouldn't mind, now I'm going to be...
Her sister's name is Cheryl. So.
Do you know her last name?
Cheryl. I get her number. Not like... Now, if she tell me not... Now, you know, if she tell me she don't want to talk to you, it's going to be...
I understand.
I can't get your number.
Well, and like I told you, I'm not going to push anybody. I'm out to find out the truth. I kind of feel like the family wants to know the truth, too.
I feel like the Cheryl, you know, I feel like the she would want to talk to you. So, she would upset, but she want to know, She want to know,
last memory being something a little different.
Yeah, you know, she's a lot.
I'm going to deal with the family if they want to deal with me. If they don't, I understand.
I'm pretty sure, you know, that, well, I'm pretty sure Cheryl will talk to you. You know, she can talk to her sister-in-law, and you know, she probably there to talk to her. They want to know, man. They want to know, and whoever did it, whoever was involved, they want to be punished.
Exactly.
That's the way it should be, you know, I mean.
Yeah, you can't.
There's no punishment, you know. I mean, legal injunction, that's still not punishment for taking somebody's life. I mean, you know, there's no punishment for taking, you know, somebody's life until the judgment day. You know.
Yes.
Taking yourself, somebody trying to leave you by the home, trying to kill you, you got to take yourself one time. Yes, no reason for nothing, man.
It just doesn't make sense. I mean, I can't tell you the countless hours I've studied the pictures, I've read the reports. Why? It just doesn't make sense. Why?
I mean, what, you know, you can't really get a motive, you know, I mean, what for what?
I mean, they didn't take her TV, they didn't take anything that I can tell. Nothing seems to be...
I don't think I know that this was cut.
I was going to ask you something else, and now I forgot. It's been a long day.
I blame myself about it, though.
Why is that?
Because, see, she had cooked. You know, she was expecting me to come back. But like I said, I forgot my clothes. I didn't go back. See, if I had went, okay, like, I get off at 11, I would have made it 5 there. About way up, way back to myself. Maybe she was still there. So she called at 11.
See, that's another reason why I don't think Edward did it, especially after talking to you. Because they know where Edward was after 11. They know for a fact where Edward was after 11. There's no question about it. No. They know for a fact he was in Tyler at a little bit after 11. There was two people that said he was there at their house, and they've got nothing to do with any of this.
Oh, really?
That's you know, especially after talking to you the last time, I thought, if she was alive at 11, then they got the wrong guy, and the right person is still out here free.
Yeah, her. Now, that's what her daughter don't see. Because, see, they came out there Friday, you know, and then I was talking to them, and you know, that's what she said. I called her at 11 and talked to her, because they were talking to her about coming out, you know, the next day, on that Saturday, you know, because everybody was going to get together and stuff, you know, down there and barbecue and stuff like that, so, that was it. If I went by there, either I could have saved her or probably got killed something too.
No, I mean, it's not your fault. It is. I know what you're saying.
But, you know,
if you're responsible.
Like, I go by there every Thursday, you know, and I went by and then this happened. And, you know, I just feel like I'm by there, you know. I went by there and got up early enough to come do some clothing in. But, you know, see, man, you can't. When time for somebody to die. That's in God's hand. We don't know how we're gonna die or what, you know, God knows. And it's in his hand. When the number come up, you're gonna die. It don't make a difference how you used to worry about it. If I had done this, I'm gonna, you know.
Yeah. You know, imagine even that 100 times more.
Yeah, you know, it was just her time. Her number came up and it was her time. See, the number you report about her, she died.
Gosh, yes. I'm sure sorry to hear that. Yeah, I lost a real dear friend when I was 18, and it profoundly affected the way I look at when people lose somebody. I don't know. But I don't want to keep you up any later, and to be honest with you, I kind of want to climb in bed.
Yeah, I got up at 4:30, man.
Oh, man, I didn't know you had to get up that early.
Yeah, I got up at 4:30. Got to work tomorrow. Work 6 days.
You don't give me Saturday off?
No, we work Saturday. When I first started out there, we worked 3 days, Monday, Tuesday. We made that for so many years. And then, we worked 4 days. And then, we had 3 days. Then, it was only 5 days.
I remember what I was going to ask you. Was there anything service-wise done at all here in Tyler for Eleanor?
No, they got her Saturday morning. I feel real, you know, shit. They got her Saturday morning and they come straight to Dallas.
Was it a local company that took her to Dallas? Or?
No, the funeral home that took care of her, they come got her.
Okay.
Yeah,
you had, by chance, remembered the name of that funeral home?
That's what you, that's what it said. Well, I'll see you, I don't know. It might have been in Cedar Hill.
She was.
47 years old, man. I couldn't believe it, you know. I don't know. I think that's why I liked her so much, because she was 47, but she wasn't 47. You know. Because, man, we used to play. I mean, ride horses, play, and just...
Do you mind if I just make a note here?
No.
Okay, Charles.
I'm going to turn into the light here. Okay. Yeah, it's got her family right here.
Yeah.
Charles Bert O.E. Bassett Jr. And Bonnie. Let's see. He's in Duncanville, not.
Yeah, Duncanville. That's where he is. Duncanville.
Okay. And Bonnie. T-R-I-N-G-F-I-E-L-D. Well, actually, I didn't realize it would be on here. I just flipped it over and it was right there.
Sure.
Birmingham, Alabama. Her mother is still living?
But
was she estranged from her mother?
Well, no, not estranged, but her mother, she don't know
what's going on.
She all mixed up and stuff.
Okay. Let's see. Cheryl Hunter was one that you talked to?
Mm-hmm. That's her sister. The rest of her brothers, I've never met them.
Okay. Well, she had a big family, didn't she?
She had a lot of brothers.
Probably going to be the funeral home, too.
Yeah.
Laurel Land. That's a big cemetery.
Oh. Now, that's over in South of Cliff, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I've been there before. Trinity Church. Cedar Hill. I've been there before, too.
That was 10 miles from Buckingham, but it's another.
She sure was an attractive lady.
She is.
And a hard worker, too. I've looked over her employment record. She's been a... I talked to even some of her former employers, and they all speak highly of her.
She was a really, that's what I said, she was a really, didn't meet with a stranger.
No, that's what everybody said, that she'd meet you and put you right at ease. And
she was sweet, man. I mean, we had lots of fun.
Yeah. Well, Leonard, I appreciate you letting me come into your home,
yeah,
especially
man.
So late. Well, I kind of slacked off myself.
Well, I work up there, and then I work for myself, too. And that really take a lot out of me.
Yeah, you must be.
You know, like, I get off, man. Every night I'll be getting there like 10, 30, 11, you know.
How you doing, guy?
I didn't work today. You know, that's what I'm kind of saying.
Well, again, I appreciate you talking with me.
Okay.
Let me come in your home.
I'm going to really work on it as soon as I get.
Well, next week, that's all I'm going to do is
okay.
Monday through Friday. Now, I'm going to be out of town tomorrow just briefly. I'll probably even be back tomorrow afternoon, but you probably won't be able to reach me tomorrow. I think I'm going to be out of pocket.
Okay.
But I'll let you close your door for all them bugs come in there, guys.
I'll try Sunday or sometime. Okay. Whenever I get in touch with
you,
I'll let you know.
Thank you, Leonard. Okay. Appreciate it. Okay, it is 9:55 p.m. Interview is...